This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Jonathan Schanzer, the executive director of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to help me understand the changing nature of the war in the Middle East, being waged not only in the corridors of power in Washington and the European capitals, but also in rooms we can't look into, the expectation that the war will continue, and ceasefire is another way of talking about rearming. Jonathan, a very good day to you. I begin with a note that the BBC investigation about the distorting of the president's speech of January 2021 is only an entry door to a long report demonstrating again and again and again that the BBC used sources during the war between Hamas and the IDF, used sources who were clearly either Hamas or heavily influenced by Hamas, and then attempted to deceive people who questioned their prejudice by claiming that this particular reporter only appeared 12 times when an actual count was 240. I just use that example. The BBC distortion, do you measure here in the United States that it was influential in the U.S., or was it influential in Europe, given its reputation? Or was during the war, was the BBC seen as a problem and not a solution? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It was a source of frustration in Israel without question, and I've heard it more than once. I think it's important to understand that BBC is viewed not just in Britain, not just in Europe, but all around the world, all of the places where the former British Empire once had influence and still has influence today. So speaking about Africa and Asia and beyond, India, I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to measure exactly how far BBC reaches, but it is the English language a channel of choice, if you will, perhaps rivaling only that of CNN International. And, you know, the Israelis repeatedly expressed their frustration throughout the course of the war. But what's so interesting is that now, as the war begins to subside, the BBC has actually acknowledged that it's breached its own editorial guidelines more than 1,500 times. That's an insane number to think about. And the way that they have characterized Hamas versus Israel, associating Israel with genocide, but not speaking about Hamas in similar tones, it just really does call into question exactly how this happened. One can say that, you know, that there is bias. And one can say that perhaps, you know, from Al Jazeera, you would understand why there is bias, because it's a channel that's owned by the Qataris. But when we talk about the UK and we talk about the liberal values espoused by the UK and the fact that it is supposed to be overseen directly by the British government, it's funded by the British government, it does begin to call into question what exactly is happening here. I don't believe that there has been a fulsome investigation as of yet in terms of what has occurred, but the BBC appears to be irredeemably corrupt, at least in my view. I think that is the message that is now slowly leaking out of London, and it will be very interesting to see exactly how this is investigated.
To Hamas, the progenitor of the violence these last years, a headline in the Times of Israel, I asked for an explanation of this very large turnout for the burying of a man named Hadar Golden, who was held 14 years, which means this is long before the present conflict and the return of hostages. Who was Hadar Golden, and what does this mean to the IDF?
Well, this is a significant moment for Israel, perhaps not in terms of the scope of the war or the strategic trajectory of the war, but this is the hostage that has been held the longest. The family of Hadar Golden has been part of the hostage family forum. So in other words, those 250 plus hostages that were taken on October 7th, that family joined forces with the other families in order to try to secure his release. Hadar Golden's mother, Leah, has been to Washington umpteen times, has met with members of Congress, has met with influential people here in this city. And this was one of the original hostages taken. Of course, the fact that he was that he was killed in the operation where he was taken, made him a little bit less of a priority from Israel's perspective. But the Israelis made sure to keep him front and center in the discussion about the release of all of the hostages. And so with a bit of pressure, he was finally released. Interesting side note, though, John, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, as he heard about the imminent release of Hadar Golden, rather than trying to facilitate it, according to the 20-point plan released by Donald Trump, he tried to prevent the release of Hadar Golden. He made that contingent, or he tried to make it contingent upon the release of 200 Hamas fighters that are still stuck in tunnels outside of the so-called yellow line. He attempted to encumber the deal that would release Hadar Golden. But in fact, he was released. He's laid to rest today. And that leaves the number of hostages still in Hamas captivity down to 4, which is a remarkable number given where we were just a few months ago.
The Board of Peace, a 10-point presentation by the Trump administration, delivered by the ambassador to the United Nations from the U.S., Mr. Walz, identified a political, technical board that will be in place supervising the rebuilding and reawakening of Gaza till 2027. After that, it's not clear to me where it's going. But it mentions the fact that we need security. It mentions the fact that we need money. The World Bank is mentioned as a source of money, but security is left undetermined. What do you make of the Board of Peace, what we know now, given that the Trump administration has put it on the table?
Well, look, I think that, you know, talking about technocratic, apolitical figures that would run Gaza day to day, that it would be in power until 2027, essentially talking about the demilitarization of Gaza. All of this, I think, is a good thing. I think the attempts right now by the UN, or by the U.S. rather, to have the U.N. adopt this 20-point plan that would effectively enshrine the Trump plan as it was initially articulated. All of this is very positive, but I do think that it needs to be understood that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Gaza. If we don't see the implementation of this plan, if we don't see some kind of demilitarization of Gaza, the creation of something that does not include Hamas, and of course we know that Hamas is still trying to take part in this in some shape or form, they need to be barred from all of this. I actually believe that the Palestinian Authority as well, Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the PA, he also needs to be excluded from this. They need to have people who truly do not have a dog in this fight. That is the way that Gaza will recover from the devastation that it has incurred over the last 2 years.
The puzzle about Hamas includes the size that is left inside the less than 50% of Gaza occupied by the unknowns. I'm told that the Israeli headlines have featured the number 20,000. Another source from the Atlantic tells me 5,000 effective fighters and a lot of hangers-on and teenagers. 5,000 is a big number, but it's not gigantic. That 5,000, is that the contention that it must disarm? That 5,000 is, or is there more thinking about what must happen for phase two?
Well, I think, John, well, first we need to understand here that Hamas has been decimated. Actually, I don't even know if decimated covers it, because decimated implies that only 10% of their fighters have been destroyed. This is we're really talking about a number that probably reflects, I don't know, perhaps now 20% of the original fighting force that Hamas had on October 7th. All of the trained fighters have been killed, save a few thousand. There are others that have been brought into the picture that have been trained anew. Most of them are young men who never held a Kalashnikov before the war. Some perhaps have more training, but, you know, the organization that is able to carry out rocket attacks against Israel is no longer. The organization that was able to breach the fence with Israel and to carry out professional military operations against Israelis, It's just not, it's not in existence any longer. And so when we talk about what happens next, I think that Hamas right now is fighting an urban war. It's an asymmetric war. They're popping up out of tunnels and they're popping back down, trying to kill Israelis with some success here or there. But by and large, this is a spent force. And that's why I think everybody understands that we need to end this already, that the Israelis need to gain full control over the Gaza Strip and hand it over to some other authority, and then to begin to allow for Hamas to hand in its weapons. The question really right now, in my view, is whether the Qataris and the Turks, the two primary patrons left that have been supporting Hamas, whether they are willing to allow for that. Donald Trump made a deal with them. They signed it. The only question now is whether they are going to follow through. And perhaps on top of that, whether Donald Trump is going to force them to do that, to coerce and cajole their terrorist client to finally end the war that they started on October 7th.
Jonathan Shanzer, the executive director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. We're going to Lebanon. There's new trouble.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.